The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
And now for a word from our sponsor. And that word is spelled N-E-C-R-O. AdamandEve.com is here to give you free stuff with that word. Free stuff is awesome. But free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. Select almost any one item for 50% off. And then Adam and Eve loads on the free stuff. Enter offer code NECRO at checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts. A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. And 6 free spicy movies. Plus, free shipping. That's NECRO, NECRO, at AdamandEve.com.
Where's Walter?
Walter, he's probably busy smoking something right now. I don't mean the way that Skip would be smoking something.
I thought he'd be like hip deep in a Taiwanese hooker.
What the fuck is Skip doing here again?
Well, somebody let the back door open, and you know what happens when that happens.
God, I never left.
Nice. He is our Floyd. He's our guy on the couch.
Uncle Floyd.
Boy, I'm not going to tell you about that hole I found in the crawl space.
Hi, Dan.
Hey, guess who's back?
Yeah.
The sexy motherfucker.
Well, you were kind of with us last week when we were talking about the Mandalorian last week.
Yes.
Because, time shifting and stuff like that with the holidays.
That's right. We bend time.
Yes, we bend time and control time.
Yes.
We're in a TARDIS?
Speaking of controlling time, Eternal Champions, I've learned that there's going to be an Elric television show.
Mm-hmm.
I am so fucking excited because I get to say more cock on this show all the time.
And they're going to fuck it up.
They better not. If they do to this what was done to Sword of Shannara.
Oh, they're going to.
I'm going to be fucking pissed.
Wait, what was the Terry Goodkin, the TV show that lasted like 2 seasons? They fucked that all up.
Don't fuck up Moorcock. You can't do that. George R. R. Martin already did it on his own. Oh, yeah. Did I say that? Yeah, because Oops. Game of Thrones is nothing but Elric ripped off. But that's me. Anyway, before we get into all that, this is what's on this week's show. It's a 10-year anniversary of a cult classic called Plaguers, and we've got the writer-director Brad Sykes on the show with us this week to talk about it, as well as wrestler and writer versus B-movie.
What? Yes,
Dan and Skip have both watched this film, and they're going to tell us what they thought of it. Also, we're going back down to Spooky Empire.
That tattooed fighter versus the non-tattooed pacifist?
Anyway, we're going back down to the Spooky Empire. We get another one of the panels that our buddy Steve Mesa got for us. And this one, Bruce fucking Campbell, guys.
Oh, the chin himself.
Yes, the chin. The chin. Also, as you guys know, going on sale, in pre-sale right now, Good Boy, my book.
Wait, Tommy. I have that edition that you gave me like 3 years ago.
Yeah, that's totally different.
Say what?
Yeah, it's different.
Did you add more content?
Yes.
Wait, is my name in it?
Yeah.
Is Dan's in it? Is Scott's in it? Is Walt's in it?
I don't know.
Doesn't have to be.
Doesn't have to be.
It's not about us.
Yeah. But anyway, Good Boy, available now at fine booksellers in pre-sale. Through Stitch Smile Publications and my publisher. So there you go.
And it will make you cry.
Yeah, it makes you cry.
It will.
Yeah,
yes,
better. Heartless fox.
As I say, the wonder of Watership Down collides with the horror of the zombie apocalypse in an adventure like none you've read before.
Zombie worms.
Yes. And also, don't forget, too, you've got adamandeve.com. It is the holidays right now. We're in full swing. It's time to get stuff for your significant other and yourself. Provided you have a significant other, don't want to.
Even if you don't.
Even if you don't,
I know for a fact something to Dan help doesn't you. Have the Ring doorbell, so you can steal his order.
Yeah.
Hell no, girl.
Yeah. So, AdamEve.com. Get a whole bunch of items for yourself at a discount, 50% off one item. You gotta get 6 movies in there, 10 tantalizing free gifts, Tantalizing, Scott. They're tantalizing.
Tantalizing, yes.
Are they juicy?
Yeah. Now, here's the catch.
Or if you're into...
When you're at the checkout, you have to use the offer code NECRO. N-E-C-R-O. Necro. Now, we do know what that implies when you're at a sex...
Fetish site.
Yeah, but that's not what it means here. Here it means you get discount, okay? Over there it means...
not good.
Yeah, get your stocking stuff, girl.
Yeah, no.
You'll be like the guy. You'll be like the guy who was on the motorcycle TV show that I can't mention.
Yeah, never mind. No.
Means you like a cold one
yes,
at night.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're like not talking frosty adult beverages.
No, we're not.
Anyway, if you want to be like AdamandEve.com and advertise in NecroCasticon, you can do that as well, can't you, Scott?
Absolutely. You can advertise your business or anything you want to advertise right here on this podcast or in the podcast by going to projectentertainmentnetwork.com. Click on the advertising banner on the home page there, and you can find out all the information you need to know about becoming a sponsor and advertising your business right here on the show or any of the other podcasts we have on the network. While you're on the website, check out the merchandise store. As Tom just said, there's plenty of stuff out there on adamandeve.com. He's got his new book available coming out there. There's all kinds of good merchandise at projectentertainmentnetwork.com. The holiday season is here, ladies and gentlemen. It's the holiday season. That means you got to start buying stuff. That's how we keep this country going. Capitalism at its finest. I love the smell of commerce in the morning, especially at projectentertainmentnetwork.com. While you're on the website, too, don't forget to check out, as I said, the merchandise store, and to show your support, buy yourself some cool swag to show your support for your favorite podcast. But the best way to show support is by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/projectentnet. Sign up today. It's only $1 a month for the base package, but the more you give, the more you get, because the more you contribute, the better the awards are to you as a patron. So sign up today, patreon.com/projectentnet.
Just don't give us syphilis.
This month on Patreon, Skip and I welcome somebody from this podcast as we revisit aliens. Yeah.
Dan?
Yeah, Dan.
Dan?
Yeah. Hi.
How are you?
Oh, yeah. Anyway, Dan's on the show this month.
He wants to go head-to-head with me.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the 69 fun kind.
I was actually going to say, what are we poking rods here? Like, what's
no, that's crossing swords. That's not 69. That's an 11. Okay.
Don't cross the streams.
All right. So before we
that's trying to listen to two podcasts at once. Don't cross the stream.
Before we get any crazier or creepier, why don't we go to Spooky Empire?
Let's go down to Florida.
I'm not sitting there. It looks too nice. This Q&A session is not my problem. Good night, everybody. Let's see which section has the lamest questions. Go ahead and start. Somebody raise your hand and go ahead. Yeah, microphone slows things down. And there's no guarantee of it being a decent question. Raise your hand up. Yeah, right over here. Yeah, no doubt. Everyone looks behind them. Was it the love of Buttery Chardonnay? What are you referring to, sir? What obscure reference are you making? I think I may have liked Buttery Chardonnays at one point. But I don't really anymore. Tastes change. Do you like Buttery Chardonnay, sir? What do you enjoy in any adult beverages? What do you enjoy? A nice kiss. Yeah, the homeless people are the healthiest. It's true, they get the most nutrition. If I'm an ale, I roll over, he's okay, he's been drinking Guinness. So good luck to you with that, sir. Yes, right over here in this section.
What is your favorite souvenir or thing you take
home? My favorite souvenir. I'm not that sentimental, though, man. My brother has a shotgun for me today. gives a shit about movies, he just likes guns. Weird stuff from Sundown, a vampire in retreat. Yeah, nice try. Nice try. That film wasn't released in Escape. I have Von Helsing's holy water dripper thing. It's like a cologne bottle. It was very ornate, and I was like, I'm gonna just steal it. I'm gonna steal it. Interestingly, from Evil Dead 2, we used Polaroids back in those days, which are technically original photographs. Each one of them is its own negative. Those disappeared in the last 2 weeks of filming Evil Dead 2. We had a ring of these, hundreds of them. So, if any one of you sons of bitches shows up with a Polaroid from Evil Dead 2, you better run. So, some of the coolest things disappear, usually the last 2 weeks of filming. Let's try this section, yes.
So, we all heard the chainsaw in the trailer.
You all heard the chainsaw in what trailer, sir?
What's going on with Mortal Kombat?
Mortal Kombat. Hey, you heard it. I didn't. Ash is not to be toyed with. We teased him a little bit recently, but he's going to get his own game that'll be out in about a year. So, the Evil Dead game, voiced by Ash, by me, the real thing is coming. So, don't get around with Mortal Kombat, blah, blah, blah. Yes. How was it to work with Macho Man Randy Savage? First, give me an idea of what you think it would be like. what do you think he's like? Just as a guy, not when he's on. What's he like? He's a scary mother scratcher, isn't he?
Was.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically him. We shared a trailer during Spider-Man. We were in the same thing together. And his girlfriend came to visit. Sir, the trailer walls are very thin. And the springs are very weak. So here's me working with Macho Man Randy Savage. Jesus Christ, man, give it a rest. So, sir, that's what it's like. He was a horny little bastard. Yes. Yes, he's dead, thank you. Yes. That's why you think I told the story. You're not going to tell that all your life.
Hey, Bruce, tell the story. Bones on green.
That's true. Let's return to our program. Yes. Favorite role in the Spider-Man trilogy. We can do a quick review if you'd like. The first one, they want me to introduce him as the human spider, which I think sucks. So because I introduce him as the Amazing Spider-Man, the first Spider-Man, I named Spider-Man. What some people would consider a cameo, as though it were insignificant. But in this case, Peter Parker wants to see his girlfriend Mary Jane and play on Broadway for the first time, but he's late coming to the show. I won't let him in, because it'll ruin the illusion. Technically, sir, I'm the only character who's ever defeated Spider-Man. Spider-Man 3, French Mayor D, Spider-Man comes to me, a mortal, for help. How often do superheroes come to mortals for help about marriage and very personal things? Never, sir. The seventh of never is when they do that. Did I help him out? Toby, you start to get with the program. I hope that's a satisfactory answer, sir. This quiet section here, man, there's snores all over here. How about the Bride of Frankenstein? Stand up, please, stand up. Show your goods. You look good.
Classic. He calls it the classic.
FedEx ship to 73 shipping. Okay, you weren't asking questions, you were bitching yourself. Very good. Yes, very good. You heard how it drains every morning? Sir, you're confusing me with my character, and you are worried you're a sick man. They have help with that, yes. Interested in playing Briscoe again? Sort of what if. It's, you know, it was only 25 years ago. One season, so yeah, we're knocking on the old door. Hey, people are rediscovering. Good, they're rediscovering that. It's better than never discovering it. Do you know when people hear they watch the show now, they go, "I didn't know you guys used the Olympics theme song for your show." I'm like, "No, dude, the Olympics stole our theme song." You watch. It's the NBC Olympics, for God's sake. That's just wrong on so many levels. Yes, in the back.
What was your favorite episode of Jack of All Trades to film?
My favorite episode of Jack of All Trades to film. When you say favorites, it's very dangerous. We don't usually have fun when we work. That's kind of a shock to you, I know, because you think actors are carried around on pillows. In between being serviced by concubines, you know? It doesn't really work like that. Normally you show up and you work 12, 14-hour day, and, you know, sometimes you have a good time. Most of the time you don't. Because these things are very difficult. Try to put your head up a cadaver's ass for a week. That was my favorite episode.
Silly Marvel movies. No, they're all bullshit.
bullshit. Every single bit of every movie is bullshit. They just get walking in loud bullshit, more and more bullshit. It's all as fake as you can get. It's a series of still images. It's not a single motion. The actors don't even make up the dialogue at the time. The dialogue isn't coming from the mouth, it's coming from speakers. And by the way, in movies and television, where does the music come from? What is that all about? Where does it come from? So don't tell me movies are real. You're like, I don't hear a score. So let's not kid ourselves, Marty. Yes.
Did you enjoy playing Elvis?
I enjoyed playing Elvis. I did. What? What American male would not like to play Elvis with cancer on his penis at 68? It's a key question because I read the script. I thought it was a very delightful, weird, slightly touching script. Well, that's right. So he has cancer on his penis, right? So Don Coscarelli, we talked about doing this movie. I like Don, you know, he did fantastic movies, same history. We're sort of peers in that respect. So I'm like, yeah, this is really interesting. Don Coscarelli. But I said, Don, are you going to see it? He goes, the penis? I go, yeah. Are you going to see it? Because you can't take that back. It puts you into a world that you might not want to go. He goes, no, we're not going to see it. I'm like, then I'm in. Because then you're really not making, you're making, now you're getting weirder. Unless there's a really good reason to show a cancer-infested penis of a 68-year-old man. Off the top of my head, I think there are many really good reasons to show it. Even in the dramatic sense, yes. What's next? I have to disappear from touring for a while in order to do stuff. Because what happens is, if you keep doing this, you don't do anything. So, yeah, I've written a bunch of stuff. Now it's time to go do some stuff. So I'll see you 10 years from now. But with new stuff, because that's the trick. You have to go do new stuff. Yeah.
Do you have any older creature that influenced you in your career?
Any older
creature or monster that influenced you growing up?
Monster that influenced me? I didn't like monster movies. They were scary. I saw The Beast with Five Fingers. It was a black and white movie, just this hand crawling around. That was enough. No way. No way. That's scary. I like listening to The Carpenters. I need music that makes me feel like everything's okay. I have lavender on my property, Mark. I'm not who you think I am. Yes.
Ash versus Evil Dead.
Ash versus Evil Dead. Thank you for not saying Stan versus Evil.
The third season, or at the end of the second.
The third, end of the second. Are we analyzing? The show has been canceled? I'm just glad how we wrapped it up. Because here's the truth. We knew by the end of the second season that our ratings were such that no one knew what Stars was or how to get it. I'm telling you the absolute truth. Bruce, what are you up to? Man, I've been working on Stars for 2 years. What's that? Well, you can download the app and try that. Yeah. When it dropped on Netflix, people thought, oh my God, what a great new show on Netflix. We were the number one pirated show. Thanks, thank you. Thank you, Millennium. Who asked that stupid question? Okay. storyline? No. So look, we knew that we were in trouble. Because Stars was in trouble. And we thought, you know, some shows get canceled in the middle of the season, and you never get to wrap it up. It's unfair for the cast members, the writers, the fans, too. Because the fans will blame it on us. Oh, you guys stop! Didn't stop, they canceled in the offseason. Oh, you guys did the show, that's what you did. Yes, that's what I did. They don't understand the power that we don't have. So we thought, okay, season three, we think this show's going down the shitter. So let's go big, let's wreck the town, let's burn it down, and Ash is going to the future with a hot robot chick to fight him in the future, so he's defeated in the past and the present and the future. He's fulfilled his legacy. The only thing that would happen in season four is you get all the way through, fight the badass for the stretcher, and die passing the mantle on to like some hot chick. That's all that would happen. Because he's fulfilled his prophecy, technically. So you're welcome. And so people were still, they're not happy with that. They wanted one more season, one more movie. But, you know, television was the only place we could do unrated. That was an unrated, you got 15 hours of unrated television. No other show is going to let you put your hero or cadaver's butt with his name where he's sitting right in his face. With a Prince Albert piercing through it, I might add. Try that, basically. Yes. Yes, sir, you're the only one holding a chainsaw. Anything I can tell you about even the video game? It's PC based, which I think most people are happy about. So that's the extent of it, sir. Here's the thing, they keep kicking these shows, these games down the road because they're about to launch and somebody does some crazy stuff. And then I go, ah. And they have to go back and sometimes retool the game to be current. Platform, Leptin and Shark Boy was a game I did. Did the entire game, days, weeks and weeks of voiceover. By the time we were done, the platform had been completely outmoded. Never saw the land there. Oh my God, that was fast. So it's gonna happen. Yes.
What is your favorite buffet food item?
My favorite buffet food item. The only problem with buffets is that very often I go into a buffet, get my tray, go and eat and leave without paying. That's my whole life as an actor during lunch. Load up the buffet and then you leave. Buffet item? They're all kind of gross, aren't they? Most like hometown buffet. It's a bit much. What's yours, sir? I'm sorry, I don't want to rain in your buffet parade. Like, are you going to go to one later tonight? Sometimes you got to eat. Yeah, but you don't got to eat that. What is your favorite buffet item? Crawfish. Cool. I bet it's really fresh and oil-free. Did you know that oil's gone now? Yep. Just that salt bar just balls it away. Thank you for your question. Yes, sir. Well, the fun is now. Honestly, the fun is now. Because it is work. We show up and look, I'm a jackass and I'm a really smart ass guy. And I make a lot of silly comments. But I do take my work really seriously. Most of the time on a film set, I am not crap about it. Because we're doing very complicated stuff. It's like a dance. So now is when we have the fun with it. I've been touring with Army of Darkness. And there's really nothing more fun than going out and bullshitting with an audience, showing the movie, and then telling them all the people's stories about the movie that they just saw. And so that's why we're here, is later. Because
when you make a movie, you have to get most of it out of the set. Like working with Sam Raimi, it doesn't matter how difficult it is. I'll do it with him any day of the week because he's basically one of the top directors in the business and basically the top director I ever worked with. So guys like that, I'll show up in a second because he makes the experience special. And look, you know what you're doing as an actor. You know when you get a shoot, you go, well, that was a stinker. You know, you work on some shows and you stand around like this, blah, 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 blah. They shoot your face. They shoot close up to people all day long. Nothing happens. Working on a Sam Raimi movie, man, every cylinder is firing because he's coming at you 87 different ways. And that's what's challenging. Challenging is good over there. Because then when it's done, 30 years later, you go, man, I'm glad you did that. Even though it sucked fired ass when he was doing it. Yes. We'll get there. Yeah. Go for it. Whatever happened to the deal did crossover remake? Nothing happened. There was talk about it bringing old Ash in again, you know, hooking him up with Mia so that we get the young badass and the old geezer, you know, giving her tips. But that's all right. We're going to make a new Dead movie, though. We're producing a new one. I think there are so many stories to be told about heroes who are unqualified. So we have a Sam Raimi's handpicked new writer-director to create a thing. He's done a new story that we're going to get involved in and shoot it, hopefully scare your little brains off. Yes?
Do you have any stories of
Lee Majors is spectacular. Lee Majors played my dad on Ash vs. Evil Dead. And if you gotta talk about mechanical hands, you might as well talk about Lee Majors, because man, he's awesome. Lee is very special because he's done 3 television shows that were over 100 episodes. I did one, that was Burn Notice. We did 111 episodes. That's 7 years of my life, I'm never gonna get back. But Lee did that 2 more times. In the era when you sleep in the studio, because he's up in the morning. But come on, Lee, let's go. He learned from the great Barbara Stanley, who is one of my favorite old-time actresses. She is spectacular as an actress. So she was his boss, and she's like, you shut up, you keep your mouth shut, you hit your bars, you say your lines, you're gonna come work before I get there, and you're gonna be there after I'm gone, because you're new. You know, that's what it is. He's like, okay, yeah, let's do that, let's do that. He was better than his own stunt guy. So he watched the stunt guy do it, and he'd go, hey, look, look, it's all right, I'll just do it, man, it's okay. And he made sure the stunt guy always got paid. He was a very classy guy, but he beat the crap out of himself as a result. You know, halfway through Fall Guy, his last go-around, he said he was, like, near Idlewild, California, on one of those trams that goes up the hillside. He's latched on one of those, and it finally dawned on him. He goes, what the hell am I doing out here? You know, it just probably hit him one day. Like, this is ridiculous. His agent chased him into his little house near the dam in Las Vegas. He wouldn't talk to him. A van full of guys in suits pulled up. He wouldn't even let him get out of the van. They wanted to have him do more of the Fall Guy. He's like, don't even get out of there, man. No, keep going. Keep turning around. See, yeah, he's a real guy. He's great. He's awesome. The great thing he is. Yes?
What is your favorite suit that you own?
My favorite suit that I own? But there is no favorites. There's no favorites. This could get my paint pen later today. You never know. But, you know, this wouldn't be a great loss. Just don't let a match anywhere near this thing. Okay, what are we doing here? Good? We'll do like 3 more insightful questions and we'll let you get on with your lives. Yes?
Do you write or
ad-lib
any of your own lines?
Do I write or ad-lib any of my own lines? Depends on what the dealio is. Sometimes you're not allowed to, because the writer has what they call a Patty Chayefsky clause. He wrote Network. He wrote Maudie, classic motion picture. He was one of the first writers to put in their contract, actors don't get to change my words. You gotta be a good writer to pull that crap off. Because it's not like actors are completely stupid idiots. They're in the moment. They will sometimes have an instinct to say something that makes a lot of sense. Or put a little button. Remember, notice I added little buttons at the end of the scenes that I felt needed little buttons. We had a little bad guy show up and lecture for like half an hour. Blah, 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 and he turns and walks up. We didn't get to say anything bad to the guy. I go, okay, it's official. The guy's a dick. I don't want to change the plot or anything, because that's too complicated. But sometimes it's helpful to change them. Like, Steve McQueen and Paul Newman were in Towering Inferno. Steve McQueen is playing like a fireman, and he's spewing all this technical crap. And Steve McQueen's not that guy. He goes to the writers and goes, guys, I'm a fireman. Give me the simplest shit, the simplest way I can say this. This valve does what? I turn this valve and what happens? And so they had to figure it out. He had to understand it for himself. I did Congo, which was covered by the Patty Chayefsky clause. John Patrick Shanley, a very well-known Broadway writer, who for some reason decided to adapt a movie called Congo. Which, don't get all artsy-fartsy on me, buddy, because you're already adapting it from a Michael Crichton book. They're not your precious Broadway words. So I do a broadcast. My girlfriend in the movie is Laura Linney. I do broadcast to her. Hey, we'll make everybody on the left. Cut. Script supervisor comes up with the script in hand. Oh, Bruce. You added a and a well, and a hum. I said to laugh, I thought she was joking. I went, get out of town. Didn't really. She goes, we need to stick to the script. I said, great. Let's do another take. Okay, so now here's how to screw up an actor's performance. Tell them it's not about performing anymore, it's about getting the words exactly right. So here's me, second take. Okay, yes, hi. We went to the place to get to the thing and make sure that we were there on time with that thing for the guy. Congratulations, John Patrick Shanley. You just screwed up the performance. You just screwed it up. So I won't put myself in a position like that ever again. Because we are part of the process, regardless of what any fancy pants writer, director, producer wants to think. We're part of the deal with it. Don't pass in there. Don't put in. Get some shit. So every situation is different. Some writers encourage it. I've worked on some stuff that's really great. We do a tape, and the writers will come running in, and they throw all the shit at you. That's good. You go, cool. You do another tape, you're really excited because it's all new. And then third take, they come back in, they keep throwing new shit at you. It's a great, I love working like that, because none of it's stale. And then they pick the best ones. These guys get so stuck on their words, they're missing the whole thing. They're missing the forest and the trees. Yes. Biggest misconception of me. Oh, you know, occasionally you'll get someone who comes up and goes, here's some poetry you'll really like. Thank you. Thanks. I'll check that out. Oh my God! So they thought I would like that. They thought I would like ghastly mutilation stories of death and agony and moroseness. Because that's the movies that I'm in. They should have given me a disc of the Carpenters. The Carpenters were good because I finally listened to them in the early 70s when my dad bought a new stereo system that if you tuned it right, the red light would go on. and you could blow into the headphones and puff them up so they would fit perfectly only to your head. And so I tuned in the Carpenters, and it was angels singing to me. And then she died. It's alright. A little levity to lighten the load of a long and lonely life. Yes, almost done, yes. Why did you dress as Ash, by the way? Ash, shut up. The only hero we're dressing as. He's a flawed hero. No, he brags a lot, but he doesn't that. He doesn't try and be Gorgon from Zordon. He's from Michigan. Now, what's the love? Ash does have torn stuff. Whenever I see the ladies being Ash, there's a lot more torn shit on these clothes. I have nothing to do with any of that. I'm not discouraging it in any way either. But I see a lot of these photo shoots of these chicks, like, in the woods doing, you know, like, sexy-ass poses covered in blood. I'm like, is there a deal being made? What's happening here? Anyway, sorry. What was your question? Well, when you make a movie, you never know what's going to happen. We didn't know that people would laugh the first year of death. To us, it was melodrama. We had to go out and marry Shelley. You can't bury Shelley, she's a friend of ours. Like, I can't say that line now. So you don't know. We thought we were making a serious war movie. It just happens that way. And you never know if it's going to succeed in future generations. Fortunately, people are accepting of Ash being the doofus hero. That I think when the dads in the audience watch it, they go, yeah. I can totally do that too. And I think that's why they pass it along to their sons. Because they go, see son, there's someone just like your father. A bullying, womanizing, loser, cheater, dope, moron. Who's doing mescaline like season two? That was my favorite. Smoking mescaline, like doing circles after Pablo died. Yeah, so. You want to play that part. That's the part you want to play. Not Batman. It's a car. Check the car. What do you say to Val Kilmer after he does that? Great, Val. Nailed it. He's the weirdest Batman. None of them could piss in that suit. You want that part? Well, you got a big ass bladder. All right, let's do one last amazing question that will solve all of the world's problems. Yes.
Army of
Darkness, constantly fighting skeletons. The reason why we got an NC-17. That we're talking skeletons. You got an NC-17 for Army of Darkness, and we had to fight. Same year, Goodfellas comes out. Opening scene, Goodfellas.
The fuck was that?
Car pulls over. Joe Pesci gets out, opens the trunk. There's a guy who's been horribly, horribly maimed. He's tied against his will. Can't do anything to defend himself. Joe Pesci takes the knife.
He fucking guy starts stabbing him. Doesn't the fucking guy out of the way. Out of the way, you fucking guy.
Swearing at him while he's killing him. That's an R rating. Fuck you, rating for it. That's because Marty Scorsese does real movies. So, we asked the ratings board, hey, what should we cut? It's the cumulative effect. What a crock of shit answer. You gotta tell us. So I think we ended up 4 exploding skeletons. They were like, that's a lot, that's scary now. What the hell, man? Welcome to show business. Yes, so sorry. Wait, which sequence? You talking about the end sequence of that movie or what? The all the tiny matches you're talking about? No, no. The entire movie was exhausting, man. We should just make a blanket statement there. Yeah, that was a great movie to be in the rearview mirror. But again, a movie that's easy to make is hard to watch. Work with that. Think about that. So before we go, thank you all for showing up because I guess they moved this from Orlando. All the chain restaurants in the world are in Orlando. Every single one. Take a rock. That's fine. Thank you for coming to Tampa. Thank you for putting my children through college that they later dropped out of. Thank you for your support. You guys have been hanging around for a hell of a long time, and I do appreciate that. Have a great afternoon. I'll see some of you later. Thank you very much.
Right, coming up later in the NecroCasticon today, we're going to have wrestler versus writer Skip and Dan talk about the movie Plaguers, the 10th anniversary edition of the cult classic. And right now, we're going to talk to the writer-director of Plaguers, Brad Sykes. Welcome to the NecroCasticon, Brad.
Thanks for having me.
So, 10 years ago, you made this little movie, and it's become quite the endearing cult classic since. Did you expect that was the treatment the movie would get from the fan base when you made it?
No, I mean, you know, I could definitely say that when we made it, I mean, as fans, you know, we are fans, you know, those who made the film, and we wanted to make a movie that we thought would be fun and that horror and sci-fi fans would enjoy. And we, you know, the movie was, it's kind of like one of these things where the movie got some good reception when it came out. But what happened was it was more the original distributor, didn't really, you know, hold up their end of the bargain particularly. That was what kind of happened. So it was sort of mismarketed. And then I kept hearing, I keep hearing things about it from people. I keep getting emails, you know, people would say, this is my favorite movie of yours. And, you know, it had a kind of a presence, kind of an enduring presence over the years. So, and I always felt like it, like I said earlier, I always felt like it didn't get enough of a release
right
the first time around.
Who was
so
the original?
Was a chance to sort of.
Who was the original distributor?
The original distributor was Image Entertainment, who, you know, they're a pretty big indie company. They are still around, you know. The thing with them is, I guess, put it briefly, they just sort of handle all different types of films, and they don't really have a, they don't really understand fans. They don't really like horror films very much. And they just kind of put out all kinds of movies. So they don't know how to treat a movie specially and how to get it to the people that would want to see it the most.
Right.
You know, that was sort of the thing about them. you know, so, I mean, they put it out, they got it out there, but not in as much as they could.
Now, who's, doing the distribution for you now with the 10-year anniversary release?
Oh, Wild Eye releasing.
And what are some of the things that Wild Eye has done that the other production company didn't do? The other distributor
in Wild Eye, I've worked with a lot of different distributors over the years, different films, and you know, some Wild Eye is one of the only ones that's sort of left now, I think, that puts out new horror movies, new cult movies, and they like these type of films. The guy who runs Wild Eye, Rob Hoschild, he loves these types of films, and he really wants to get them out there, and he knows how to do that. He, like, I mean, I've done, we've had two movies released by Wild Eye before Plaguers.
Okay.
We did an anthology film called High Eight, and we did one called High Death. And, for example, on those two films, High Eight, for example, was released on VHS. It had it aside from the, you know, DVD and streaming releases and all that. It, we did a VHS release, and Rob does that. He's one of the only people that does that, once again, because, you know, he really loves this stuff and gets it. So we thought that was, you know, the unique marketing angles, you know, that are appropriate to the films.
It's like a grassroots thing. You appeal to somebody,
exactly,
to that niche market, and it builds people talking about your product.
Exactly. It's not just like throwing, each movie is treated more specially. It's not just like, okay, it's another one, you know, releasing, you know, like with Image, it would be like, who knows how many movies they're releasing that month. And, you know, your movie is just kind of thrown in the pile with all the others, you know. And Rob treats movies more specially. He has a more specialized approach to releasing a movie. So, you know, and he suggested the idea to us about doing a re-release of Plaguers and doing a 10th anniversary and also doing a Blu-ray of it, because the movie had never been on Blu-ray. That was something else that always kind of bothered me, that, you know, there are all these other sci-fi movies coming out on Blu-ray, all kinds of, you know, low budget movies and stuff. But our movie, just Image, never did that. So this is also kind of a cool thing to do, to get the movie, you know, make the release more special, frankly, to give it an upgrade and, you know, do some new extras for it and stuff.
Dan.
Oh, sorry. Now, what are some of your, because I had the opportunity to watch the film, and I definitely picked up vibes from the movie and some of your influences. When you were a young kid, like, I don't know your exact age, so I'm assuming that you're somewhere in the same age bracket as me. What were some of your favorite films growing up in the horror sci-fi genre, some of your favorite directors, and how did they influence you going into filmmaking, and especially something like this, which is a sci-fi horror, cosmic horror film, as it were?
Right. No, well, I mean, I'll tell you one for sure. Just the first one that comes to mind is Prince of Darkness, because, you know, I saw that was the first John Carpenter film I saw in the theater. First run, it made a huge impact on me. It's still one of my favorite Carpenter films, and that movie definitely had an influence on Plaguers. Another movie that I saw on video, you know, when I was younger, was Demons. It was Lamberto Bava's Demons, and that was one of the first Italian horror films I saw. So that sort of opened up, you know, my mind to that, you know, the possibilities that you have with Italian horror, which are more extreme than American horror movies. And there's a lot of different directors I'm a fan of. I mean, Romero is one of my major, you know, influences, and Carpenter is up there, and there are a lot of other people. But, you know, I grew up watching sci-fi horror movies. These type of movies were playing in the theater when I was growing up. I saw them in the theater first run. You know, some lower budget stuff, you know, like Charlie Band stuff, you know, and then bigger movies like, you know, Aliens, like Cameron's Aliens. I saw that first run, you know. So, you know, these type of movies were in the, you know, mainstream, I guess you could say. They were definitely playing in theaters, and of course there are a lot that were on cable and stuff. But I never necessarily thought I would get to make a movie like that. It wasn't really something I was aiming for, and then it sort of presented itself, you know, the opportunity presented itself. And I was like, wow, we're going to make one of these type of films. So there were definitely a lot of influences there. And then, of course, I tried to bring something new to it. I tried to give it some new twists. But those are some of the films that, and Plaguers is a referential movie, intentionally referential movie. I mean, I'm not trying to pretend. If anything, I wanted the movie to feel like it could have been drawn right out of that time period, like in the mid-80s. You know, when you had that kind of stuff out there, Corman stuff, you know, all these types of things.
Cool. Let's skip here. I did have a question, because John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness is not a really well-known Carpenter flick. It doesn't have the teeth or the staying power of some of his other films. So what exactly about the film Prince of Darkness stood out to you?
It's, you know, it's probably just like, part of it's just when I saw it, you know, like we all have movies that we saw when we were a certain age, it just like imprinted themselves onto us you know, for that reason alone, because if we saw him at the right age. But I actually really, I mean, I still think the movie is a really good movie, and I think it's a slow build. It's definitely a slower build than other Carpenter films, but I think that once it, you know, it has this doom-laden, creepy, apocalyptic feel, and within a very compressed situation with a limited number of characters, that I think is just very unique.
So it's a sleep album. It's an album for sleep. It's a doom metal album, but a movie version.
I just love it. I love the music too. I think it's one of his best scores. You know, like it's kind of one of his most under. It is underappreciated. You said underappreciated or not as well known. It's true. You're right.
It is a part of his Apocalypse trilogy. So.
Right. And I'm not a fan. Like I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of In the Mouth of Madness. Like I don't care for that movie. I saw that first run too, and I even watched it again recently, and I was like, no, it just doesn't. That movie to me just kind of goes off. It sort of spins off almost into nothingness. Like it just doesn't. I don't know. It's almost too big. Like it's kind of, you know, it's almost too big for what they could pull off on some level. But whatever. I know that movie has a lot of fans too. You know. Mm-hmm. You know, but anyway, yeah, those are, you know, Carpenter was my main, in terms of the way I directed Plaguers, Carpenter was the director I was looking at the most just because of the way I wanted to shoot the movie classically and, you know, not do a lot of handheld, do a lot of tripod work and dolly work and wider compositions, not a ton of real close-ups. Visually, I was definitely aiming, he was definitely the biggest influence on the movie visually. You know,
this is Scott here. I wanted to ask you a question real quick, Brad, too. Now, every movie you work on, every project you work on, of course, is a learning experience. You just talked about the influence you got from people like John Carpenter and so forth, and really a learn-as-you-go process. What would you say you learn from working with a veteran actor like Steve Railsback?
Well, I mean, I really enjoyed working with him. I mean, he was great to work with. I think that sometimes it was just about handling actors, you know, a bit differently. It was about sort of having more prep time with them, which you don't always get to have. So in this movie, we did. On Plaguers, he was actually the first actor we cast. And I wrote the part for him, too, which I don't usually do. I usually never, you know, because then you can get disappointed. But we were actually able to get Steve in the movie. And I think a lot of the, you know, one of the things I took away from working with him for sure was just the benefit of having more time to sort of talk about the script, talk about, because Steve was interested in everything. He wasn't just talking about his character. He would talk about the other characters. He was talking about the whole movie. You know, that's kind of how he is. He just really, you know, he's just very interested in every aspect of the production, really. Or certainly he was on our film.
Do you sometimes think you're walking a fine line when it comes to what you envision as the director for your movie and what a veteran like him will have for feedback, that it may change too much, or do you kind of, you really have to weigh the options sometimes?
That happens with any actor, just about. I mean, you know, they're always, like, for example, whenever I do a read-through, I will, on any film, I always tell the actors, you know, if you want to, you know, make adjustments to the lines, I'll hear them. I'm interested in hearing them, you know. But if I'll make the final decision whether we're going to use it or not. You know, I like to be collaborative, but you need to know, you do need to draw a line, like you just said. You do need to draw a line. You need to know what that line is. You need to know, you know, when they crossed it and when it's just going into improv that's just not appropriate. There wasn't a whole lot of. I think it's funny. I remember even like there were some technical terms. There were some things you were talking to him about, even some of the other characters' dialogue, and he would, you know, give some suggestions about sort of some technical terminology, you know, stuff like that. It was just, you know, all kinds of things. But he would talk to them too. He would talk to the other cast members, you know, here and there. And he would even, I remember him giving me a suggestion one time about one of the actors in another scene that he was in, but he was not really like a big part of the scene. And he would say, hey, what do you think about telling her to do it this way? And it was right. So I think you should always be open to things like that, and especially when you're dealing with somebody like him. you know, who has a ton of experience, and that's why you are a fan of his in the first place, you know, because he's done all this great work. So.
Now, Brad, I have a question. What is it about your films in particular, because we live in a time where we have such a high concentration of entertainment, you know, whether it's video on demand, Netflix, Hulu, you know, there's so many platforms we're constantly taking in information. What is it about your films that would make it stand out, that would make our listeners go out and hunt down a film like Plaguers and like some of your other works in order to enjoy for their type of horror?
Well, I'll tell you what they are. You know, like what Plaguers is and what a lot of my other movies are, is they are a return to, you know, horror filmmaking in sort of a more fun way. And I say that in the sense that, you know, I think in some level horror movies nowadays, they've kind of lost their, not entertainment value, but they're not as entertaining as they used to be. They're not as much fun as they used to be. Another thing I would say, what makes my movie stand out is if you like this type of thing, I'm a very big proponent of practical effects, of old school techniques, in terms of makeup effects and everything. I mean, that goes for all of my movies, not just Plaguers. It's always been like that. And I never did it because I was trying to make a statement. It was just because how I wanted to do it and how I felt it should always be done, whether it's gore or creatures or whatever. And I'm also, you know, my movies, you know, I try to bring you into a world in as realistic a way as I can. And what I mean by that is I'm not interested in shooting an entire movie in front of a green screen. And I'm always going to push the envelope. My movies always push the envelope. Whatever budget we have, I don't think people need to know the budgets or be interested in the budgets. People just want to be entertained. So whatever resources we've had, I always like try to maximize and push them to the limit and show people some things they haven't seen before, and just show them a good time. You know, I think a lot of horror movies nowadays, they're not fun, and I think they tend to almost feel like taking medicine sometimes. You know, so that's what I would say to that. I mean, within that, of course, I've done a lot of different movies. You know, it depends on what kind of horror you like. And I actually do like a lot of different types of horror. So, you know, I've done films that are more confrontational and edgier. And then I've done things that are more fit more neatly into a genre, like Camp Blood or Plaguers or Death Factory or something like that. So, you know, it just kind of depends. I mean, I like to do different things every time out. So, you know... right now we're doing anthology horror that is like very filmmaker based and very creative and not fitting into any, like, we're not fitting easily into any exact genre in the sense that, you know, people are doing things that are more creative, like we did with High Eight or High Death, and we're doing one now called High Fear that's sort of the last of the trilogy. So, you know, for me, every film should be different, you know, everything should be different. And,
With names like that, I'm sure those movies are popular in Colorado.
Yeah, you think so?
Maybe Oakland.
They're popular everywhere.
Brad, it's Skip here again. Now, looking back on your 10th anniversary, I don't know if you've revisited the Plaguers recently.
Watched it and QC'd it. I mean, we had to watch it a bunch of times when we did the high, you know, the new transfer and everything. So, yeah, it's pretty fresh in my mind.
Okay, cool. So, like, George Lucas is famous for going around changing all of his films. If there's anything that you could go back and change about Plaguers, what would it be and why?
You know, it's interesting. I mean, there's some things, yeah. I mean, I mean, some of the special, you know, it's funny, like some of the miniature work and stuff, you know, those shots, like you could say, well, you could change the miniature, you could upgrade the miniature, or let's say you have the budget to upgrade the miniatures, you know, whatever. It's always a budgetary thing. But, you know, would I really want to do that? You know, because I feel like that's all part and parcel of the movie. I think it's all about physical effects and it's about old school stuff. And I think that's what people like. They either like or don't like about it. You know, I mean, it's when it came out, when it first came out in 2009, it was a whole different time because we were in this, you know, Avatar era. You know, Avatar had just come out. Everyone was embracing that. It was very CG oriented. Everyone was really into that type of stuff as far as sci-fi stuff goes. And so our movie was really not, it was really going against the trend. Now I think people are more interested in seeing those type of effects because they missed them. They're like, oh, what happened to all those effects? Well, they, you know, they went away. You know, you guys embrace sci-fi channel movies and Avatar and whatever. So then that kind of stuff started to die out. So I'm not a big fan of going back in and messing with my movie, on any of my movies. I mean, you know, like I said, I could go back, for example, and change the minute. But would that really change the movie? No. I mean, people either still will either like the movie or not like the movie or think whatever they think. You know, and so I don't know. There's not a whole lot about it. And I surely wouldn't change any of the makeup effects, any of that kind of stuff, or, you know, I don't, there's not a whole lot about it I would change. I think it would, you know, be tough to turn it into a different movie at this point.
Well, you definitely kept the FX people busy with this film.
Oh yeah, we had a great crew. I mean, and they did more than just effects. I mean, they did special props and all that, which is really cool because if you can integrate things creatively that way, then everyone's more on the same page. You know, I mean, we had an art department, we had a production designer, but it was kind of cool to, you know, like there were some things like the Thanatos green ball, you know, energy ball thing. That was one of those where it's like, is this a production design thing or is this an effects thing? Well, the effects guys have some cool ideas and they're, you know, yeah, why don't they do it? You know, why don't they build it? They wanted to build it. So why don't they build it? So, you know, I think things like that can be really cool. But yeah, they did have a lot. They had a lot of work to do. We didn't have a lot of money to do it. It was a very ambitious movie and we didn't cut anything out of the script. And even when our budget got slashed, we were originally supposed to have a bigger budget and we were actually going to shoot the movie on 35 millimeter. That fell by the wayside at some point, but it was like, well, we still want to make the movie and we'll just make it in less days and we'll shoot it on, you know, digital and all that. But they definitely had a big workload for sure. Some very talented people working on that.
The beautiful thing about digital cameras nowadays is that they make your movie look like whatever you want them to look like. So you can still give it that 35 millimeter look with that
camera.
Oh
yeah, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. No, that technology just keeps getting better and better. I mean, it just keeps getting smoother. The look, you know, gets smoother. And you don't necessarily have to have an Alexa or whatever. Right. You know, you don't have to do it on those cameras. It's great. You know, I mean, I love the look of Plagueers. I love how it looks. We had a lot of cool lighting opportunities and stuff and some cool sets. And some of those sets were already standing. And then some of them we built for the movie. It was kind of a mixture. But
so what's in the pipeline?
We have a very good director at the time.
What's in the pipeline?
What's in the pipeline right now is I mentioned earlier this movie High Fear, and basically, this is a, like I said, we've done three of these anthologies. This is the third one. It's in production right now. We shot our segment for it in September, so we're editing that right now. And it's funny because there's going to be some visual effects in that. I'd kind of gone back to practical. After Plagueers, I was like, okay, I want to do some stuff that's more stripped down. And so we did, you know, we just went back to more to gore effects and makeup. But with this one, there's some more visual effects, kind of not the exact type of stuff we did in Plagueers. It's different, but we're going back to that a little bit because it's a sci-fi tale set on Earth. It's not in space, and we're editing that right now. And we have other segments in the film, other directors involved. Tim Ritter and Todd Sheets are two of them who I've worked with on the past two films. They did segments for the previous two anthologies we did. So, yeah, so that's what we're working on, and, you know, got some other things kind of I'm ruminating over, but, you know, doing this release for Plagueers has been pretty cool. We got a lot of nice feedback already. The movie's only been out for about a month, and it's already generating a lot of nice, you know, feedback from people picking it up who either saw it the first time and liked it, or they never saw it at all. They never knew about it till now. So that's what we're working on, you know?
A lot of good movies coming out on Blu-ray like yours now. I'm Dreaming of a White Doomsday. Mike Lombardo's film's out on Blu-ray now, too. And the distributorship for these two is getting them into stores like Walmart and whatnot and helping you guys out a lot,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, to see the movie in all the stores, I mean, I've been getting, like, ever since the movie came out, I mean, obviously we saw it in our store, but I've been getting emails and, you know, stuff from people sending pictures of the, they picked up the movie, you know, they bought the movie in their store, and it's like every state, you know, and it's huge. I mean, I'm thrilled with this because when the movie first came out in 2009, yeah, it was in Blockbuster, but Blockbuster was already, you know, they were kind of on
their
way.
They were already
out,
the Titanic, you know? After it hit an iceberg.
They were, yeah, exactly. Well, it was literally
taking
like
out water, Captain.
It was like a double whammy because we had Image was almost, they were filing Chapter 11. Image Entertainment was almost bankrupt, and Blockbuster was, they were going pretty, you know, they were going down. And they got the movie into Blockbuster, but then what happened was Image, because they were trying to get money wherever they could, they priced the movie way too high for the chains, for like Best Buy, Walmart, and all these chains, and Target. And so they all passed. They didn't stock it.
Right.
So it was hard to get them. It was hard to, for anyone to really see the movie outside of Blockbuster. Or, you know, it ended up on Netflix. It's still on Netflix, I guess, the older release.
Well, but it's just got a new audience for it. Yeah. You know, it's a blessing.
And I think, I mean, wouldn't you guys, it is a blessing. It is a blessing. I mean, wouldn't you guys say, like, there's more interest in retro stuff and physical effects, practical effects now than there was in 2009? I think there is. I mean,
oh, yeah,
you know, it's just how it happened. It's not like anyone made a, you know, an effort to do, it's like, you know, Stranger Things comes out and everyone's like, whoa, you know, and it's like, yeah, okay, you know, I love that stuff too. And, you know, the Duffer Brothers ended up doing that and they were at the right place at the right time with that, right. You know.
And look at movies like Night of the Creeps having such a resurgence, you know. So your movie's in good company now, Brad.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. It's in the tradition. You just mentioned Night of the Creeps. It's in the tradition of that. You know, it's in the tradition of those type of movie. I remember when I first saw that, I loved it, and I've always been a fan. And, you know, and then you learn, like, as you get older, and then you work, and you hang out with other filmmakers and other fans and stuff, and you realize, oh, there's a lot of other people who like this movie, too. You know, you're not just a weird kid that liked Night of the Creeps, you know, when you're in high school or whatever. There's a lot of love for that movie and for a lot of 80s. Horror and retro stuff. So, you know, like I said, we did this for out of love for it, and it was, you know, now I think the timing is better, frankly, for it than. And also, I should point out that Wild Eye, when you look at the artwork for Plaguers, you see that creature on the cover and all that stuff. That's exactly the artwork the movie should have, and it's the artwork it should have had in 2009. And Image, once again, did not know how to, you know, their artwork was poor. You know, right. they didn't get the movie. They didn't get it like we get it. You know, that we get that type of stuff. They didn't have anybody working there that got it. So that's a sort of a lesson of how, you know, artwork can affect
make
your
the
movie's
difference.
Reception.
Right,
and,
it really make the difference.
It really does. And any like any filmmaker knows that, and especially if you've had like I've had like 20 plus movies released over the years, and I've seen artwork, you know, like bad, you know, I've seen some bad artwork that didn't represent the film, and I've seen some artwork that was terrific, you know, and I was like real happy with it. So, but you that is not your call as a filmmaker. You do not get a say in that, you know. So it can be very random sometimes.
Well, Brad Sykes, thank you very much for joining us on the Necrocasticon this week to commemorate the 10-year anniversary of Plaguers.
Thanks for having me.
So, Scott, guess what time it is, man?
Kevin's?
It is now time for our very first review-off.
That's what they call it these days,
huh? Review-off, wrestler versus writer over a B-movie. And this week's B-movie is called what, Scott?
It's called Plaguers.
when a band of sexy space pirates hijack a fuel transport vessel bound for Earth, an alien virus known only as Thanatos is accidentally released. The contingent mutates its victims, transforming one after another into ravenous, demonic creatures. Pirates and crew must join together to destroy the undead plaguers as the ship nears Earth, threatening to infect the entire planet. Introducing, in this two-on-one handicap battle, in this corner, Plaguers! And in this corner, the tag team duo that will battle it out against Plaguers first. He loves cigars. He loves Jim Beam. But he is a man who loves to take him down with his most odious and irreverent melodious voice. Please welcome at this time. He is the one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend. I apologize. This is the wrong introduction. Ladies and gentlemen, Skip Novak. And well, his partner. He was retired. Five times. He has returned for the 10th. Once again, battling it out in the two-on-one wrestler versus movie arena. Actually, it's a bingo hall, but who's counting? Ladies and gentlemen, from upstate New York, he weighs in at a slim, trim, cut 100 and...
something five. Pounds.
75 pounds. We'll go with that. Ladies and gentlemen, Sergeant Fury, the battler himself, the dominator of everything he comes in contact with, including tacos. Ladies and gentlemen, Dan Roberts.
All right, guys. So one of you will be a
Roberts.
So anyway, guys, one of you guys defends this movie and one of you doesn't. We're going to leave it up to our audience to decide who is who in that. Dan, let you go first.
Okay, so I must preface that I decided to, what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you how I saw this movie, and then I'm going to tell you what I thought of this movie. So we had a going away party for someone at work who was retiring after 35 years of working at this plant. There was a cornucopia of food. I'm not used to eating more than 1,700 calories a day. I had 7 cupcakes, 2 sodas, and 3 heaping plates of food. I was in a food coma. I crawl home. Crawl into my apartment. Tacos were on the menu.
Complex carbohydrates abound.
Carbs, so many carbs. So I crawl my fat ass onto my couch, and I decide that I'm going to watch this week's movie for this week's podcast, which was Plaguers.
Now, this is a 10th anniversary cult 10th anniversary. Classic.
Cult
now, we know class. When we say cult classic, that's another way of saying, hey, Mark, this is a bad movie.
which you may want to argue. However, comma, I am going to throw my 2 cents at this film. As I laid in a food coma with my eyes open, with me having to take eye drops in order to avoid the dry out from the amount of sugar that had suddenly doused my system because I've purified my body to get down to the 175 pounds that Mr. Scott just mentioned in my weigh-in. I will say this. It was like someone had gone to the video store in the late 80s and early 90s and picked a B-movie off the rack and shoved it in a VCR and just let me lay there in a NyQuil-induced coma while I sat there with Vicks Vapor Rub all on my chest, recovering from bad decisions and poor parenting. That's what this movie was amounting to for me. And it was a nostalgia fest because, as Brad said, in our interview with him, he feels this connection to this Carpertonian practical effects, the thing, you know, Prince of Darkness, need for liquid latex gore fest. There were shades of Ridley Scott's Alien and, of course, James Cameron Aliens in this one. More so Alien in the fact that if you go over, as Mr. Scott, you know, so eloquently put it during the announcement for this, the synopsis of said movie, it sounds shockingly carbon copyishly like Alien a little bit. And I mean, it's okay to spoon feed me that because at that point I was in a food coma and I could barely function. So as I sat here watching this and watched this liquid latex bloody zombie fest in space due to the Thanatos, you know, virus that all of these pirates, space pirates, were getting, I said to myself, you know what? This isn't half bad. This is exactly what I would have done in like 1991 if I was sick at home. My mom would have gone to Berliner Video or sent my dad there to get a stack of VHSs so I could lay there on my side and puke into a bucket and regret life decisions and the fact that she's watching All in the Family and friggin' Days of Our Lives and Another World, ignoring her fed, you know, her fat kid dying of like 105 degree temperature in the bedroom. Essentially, I was
sucking up kid. It builds character.
It did. It built character, and so did this movie. I didn't mind this film, and I will say this about it: the liquid latex effects that I keep joking about. You know, Brad went back to the practicals. You know, the practical movie magic of latex practical effects of having bloody
latex
corpses. Instead, hey, what can I say? I don't give a shit. You know, back in my day, it was Karo syrup and, you know, red dye number 5. There you go, kids. It wasn't, we're not going to have real blood. We're going to have green screen blood because it's more cost effective. You know, you could tell where there were the models and everything. I had fun with the movie as I laid there. I'm not going to sit here and completely bash it because it's not Death Camp 3. But I will go on a limb and say that, you know, he talked about it in the interview that, you know, he was very drawn to the movies of his day, those VHS rentals that we've talked about nostalgically on this film. And I know Skip Novak is not a fan of what I'm saying. Now, I will say this, you know, it might fall short on some people's list. I'd tell people, give it a whirl, give it a video on demand watch. I kind of dug it for what it was. I really did enjoy the 1980s video store nostalgia of this film.
All right, Skip.
Dan summed this up best at the beginning when he said he was not feeling well because he was induced with so many complex carbohydrates and sugar. A meth head would love this film. They would fall in love with it. You have penis-shaped spaceships. You have women who are extremely eroticized and turned on by gore and death.
Go on.
See, I'm following
here. There's no problem here with this movie.
Negatives that are positives. We do have blood-covered titties as a hashtag.
But you don't get to see the titties. And while it is trauma-esque.
So it was a Sears or JCPenney's catalog.
Pretty much.
Okay.
But it while it is trauma-esque in its practical effects and it's gore, the repetitive B-roll that is shown, the lack of writing, the inability for the characters to emote properly, I'm going to tell you right now, it does have a very happy ending. Okay. So getting back a little bit, the writing, the repetitive B-roll, the poor acting, all just destroy this film. There's so many just silent scenes where they could have been filled with something else, or they could have used a different shot. They use the same corridor in almost every shot of the spaceship. Also, Dan, you may not have noticed, they had two different types of automatic closing doors. They had regular vertical sliding doors, and then they had this weird triangular-shaped sliding door. What's the purpose of that? I don't know.
To cut aliens in half if you're running down the corridor and you need to push the button so it slices quicker.
But no alien was cut in half. There was an alien's head who was sliced off, and then she promptly picked it up and put it back on. Also, since this is a movie that takes place in space in the future, why are they using a Smith & Wesson 357 revolver?
Because it is the most powerful handgun on planet Earth. And if I was going to bring
that would
it
be
the
44
space,
Magnum, it would, son of a bitch. Pack 44. Dirty Harry's 44 Magnum. Not a Smith & Wesson 357.
Handgun in play.
Then you had someone else using a 9mm. Then you had someone else using a space gun. Come on. All right. The continuity in it in and of itself just destroys this film.
At what point am I the arms dealer here?
However, on another point, looking back at a party game, it would be fun to drink to that. Every time an inappropriate gun shows up, drink. It would be like saying, Scott, can you help me? What's
guns,
that word?
Guns are
what's
never
that
inappropriate
word?
In a movie with titties.
What's that word Thank we you. Use to drink on this show?
Prose.
Prose, yes. It would be like using prose on the Necrocasticon. All right? So inappropriate guns, drinking game. I see how it works. So that just breaks it down. However, from a scientific standpoint, and I am not a physicist.
It shows.
Go fuck yourself. However, I've done a lot of reading. And since the spaceship kind of takes place, it starts 24 hours before they get to Earth. Then, about 18 hours later, they're approaching Earth and all hell's breaking loose. Right? You're within the gravitational orbit of the moon and Earth. So the moon and Earth, you are as close to Earth. Actually, you're closer to Earth than the moon is. And all hell's breaking loose. No one decides to just and this.
You know what's concerning me right now is that as you're doing through this soliloquy, Dan is disrobing.
He's getting ready. He's getting ready for the comeback. He's gonna fire up, baby.
I'm hoping to see nipple.
You don't want to. I've seen him.
It's not that. It's just that I know Dan used to be 250 pounds and now he's a svelte 175. So hey, let's see that stretch mark nipples.
Oh. Surgery bitch.
That's a great punk band, by the way. Stretch Mark Nipples are fantastic. Their second album, great listen. First album sucks, but the second one's good.
Stretch Mark Nipples' anyway. Second album is Ingrown Anal Hair.
That's the first album. That's the one that sucks.
Ah, that's right. That's right.
Second one's Vaginal Waste Product. Great album.
Great album. So, but coming from space and knowing a little bit about how the trajectories work, the exterior shots of the spaceship approaching Earth from that angle is completely wrong. And they show it twice, once at the 24-hour mark and once at about the 18-hour mark. It's completely wrong. Another thing, and this is where the happy ending of the movie comes.
Fuck, you took notes?
Well, what's even worse is I feel like I'm getting a disrespect
to Neil deGrasse
Tyson right now.
I was thinking the same thing, Dan.
We got a badass over
here for like 3 hours. Okay, so
that is the wrong sky in Titanic.
BB-8 would just be spinning in sand.
Neil deGrasse Tyson is my man.
All
right,
I love
him. He is my personal astrophysicist.
Oh yeah,
that was a practical effect. Oh fuck me.
So at the end of the film, and spoilers, 5, 4, 3, 2, go fuck yourself. The captain of the ship, this blonde chick, is in an escape pod, and someone had put the Thantos glowing green orby object in there with her, and she's trying to escape. Unfortunately, when she ejects herself, the spaceship blows up, and she goes into a tumbling trajectory towards Earth, ass over tea kettle, head over heels, however you want to put it. All right. Now, tumbling towards Earth and its gravitational pull. And anyone who knows anything about science and space and trajectories can tell you that you have 7 degrees. Seven. That's one hand plus two fingers of the other hand, unless you have fingers missing on a hand.
Unless you're a shop teacher.
Exactly. So you have 7 degrees to get into it. And this is where the happy ending comes in, because these are just space zombies. Remember that. Thantos is just another word for space zombies. All right. They turn dead people back to life. And if you're killed, you come back to life. You can't be killed unless like your head is completely severed from your body. All right. So these are space zombies. All right. 7 degrees. This thing's tumbling ass over tea kettle. So as soon as it hits our atmosphere, boom, it's done. There's no more Thantos. There's no destruction of Earth. Everything is completely clear and free. This is why there has never been a Plaguers 2, the death of Earth. Period.
Okay.
All right, so in other words, Dan.
Come on, fight with science, bitch.
Dude, oh, you motherfucker.
Here we go.
All right, do I need to go wake the 8-year-old up?
I'll fight with science. Uh-huh.
Asshole.
Science, okay. Bitch.
I just got science bitched. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Sergeant Fury's last podcast with the Necrocast. Today, Skip Novak outsmarts Sergeant Fury.
Tapped out. No, this was a handicap match. You guys are a tag team.
No, Scott. I want an official announcement.
Ladies and gentlemen, the referee has determined this match is a draw.
Draw, yes.
I'll expect a check in the mail.
You know what this means? This means Apollo versus Rocky 2.
Well, what it means is this is a cult B movie, so it's a bad B movie. It's a bad movie. All right, there's no way around it. Brad knows he made a bad movie. It is what it is. As much as I literally took three sittings
for me to sit through this. But as much as all that is, the practical effects are great. You know, I don't know who the practical effects team was.
He had to watch this three times, Dan.
No.
I had to watch 3D, bitch.
There you go.
Fine. He did. And we all saw Killer Bees.
I had to watch Tsunami.
Yeah.
Okay. Are we suddenly pulling out our B-movie dicks for this podcast? Because I literally have an entire Velocipaster. Do you know what it's like to get tagged post on Facebook about Velocipaster?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, great movie. Catholic Velociraptors. It's what we
Fighting
need.
Fighting ninjas.
Mm-hmm. Wait. I'm waiting for Tommy to bring his Velociraptor out.
Yeah.
We need to put a little cowl on.
Yeah. It looks like a 6-foot turkey. They look like a 6-foot tall fucking turkey.
But look, in all honesty, look, like I said, the practical effects are brilliant in this film, and that's worth the watch alone. If you go into it with anything else, you'll be sorely disappointed.
You can find him at Necrocasticon.
MFLA. Hitchhiked his way across the USA.
You can find the Necrocasticon wherever you get your fine ass podcasts, right, Dan?
Yeah, fine ass podcast girl.
A hustle here and a hustle there.
That's right. We're also all over social media, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter as the Necrocasticon. I am at TokenBot_Tom on Twitter. Tommy Clark on the Facebook, and of course, don't forget to check out my book, Good Boy. Get a copy of it. It's Watership Down with Zombies. Or how about Walking Dead from a Dog's Point of View?
That worked.
There you go. All right. Scott, what about you?
YouTube. That's where you can find me most of these days on my YouTube channel, Mr. Scott Reacts, where I do reaction videos. It's growing every single day, and I thank everybody who hits the subscribe button and checks out the content. It's been a lot of fun doing that channel. More videos coming, as always, but I always like in feedback and suggestions, so please check out my videos, comment away, let me know what you'd like to see me react to, and also you can find me on Twitter at Mr. Scott Reacts as well.
Now, Walter's not with us this week, but you can find Your Walt Ball on Twitter. And what is he on the Instagram?
He is on Twitter. He's Your Walt Ball. And on Instagram, he's smoking_Walt_ball.
Yeah, he's a foodie, so check out what he smokes in that smoker.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Smoked a turkey for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, man. Look good. Look really
Tommy,
good.
What did you smoke?
Mm-hmm. What hasn't he smoked?
Anyway, Dan, how about them brownies? Anyway, Dan?
Well, you can find me munching brownies on the side of a mountain anytime on Instagram and Twitter at The Sergeant Fury. And you can catch my podcast, Films of Fury, on Facebook at FOF Podcast and wherever you get your fine ass podcast, girl.
Mr. Skip Novak, where can we find you?
Oh, well, right now you can find me on Mr. Scott Reacts to Edgar Allan Poe versus Stephen King epic rack battles on YouTube.com because that's fucking awesome.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you.
But honestly, you can find me on the Facebook, Skip Novak. I'm the one with the Harley Davidson, I think, or the Twitter, Skip Novak, or the Yahoo, not Yahoo. Who uses Yahoo anymore? You can find me on the Instagram at Skip Novak, and you can find me on Amazon author's page, Skip Novak. Buy my books. I need money.
Yes, we all do. Money's good. Next week, on the Necrocasticon, our best of the year show. Best of the year, by that we mean our fifth annual
And holiday I cannot believe
gift guide.
It's coming up already. That's crazy.
And Alita Battle Angel is not allowed to be talked about.
Fuck you. It's a great movie.
Oh, that's fighting words from Tom.
That's my number one movie of the year, bitch.
He's going to dick punch you right in the soul, son.
That Dr. Sleep.
Well, is in my soul because I have no soul, so I have dick.
Well, we'll talk about that next week here. I will be telling you guys what we liked in metal and horror, whether it be on the screen, the monitor, or on the page next week here on the show. Basically, you know, tells you what you can probably get for your people in your life at the last minute. Alrighty, so that next week and the week after that, the Sith are scary.
Yes, they are.
Yes, they are.
Yes. Episode 9, bitches.
Yes, our annual Star Wars.
The Return of Yoda!
Our annual Star Wars show. For your pleasure here.
Well, we didn't really do one last year. We couldn't really do one last year because they screwed up the scheduling.
We will this year.
Yeah. There'll be plenty to talk about.
Yes, yes. Like we talked about Mandalorian last week. So
are we going to talk about Rey Skywalker?
God.
Well, I'd like to talk about Rey Skywalker any day.
She's not Rey Skywalker. She's Rey Palpatine.
I don't care what you call her.
I have a friend who dressed up like her for Halloween. Perfect match.
Nice.
She's also a ballet dancer.
So, until next week, when we get to the best of the year, this chapter of the Necrocasticon is
closed.
The Necrocasticon is an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network. Written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groverston, Walter Ball, and Dan Roberts. Music provided by Daniel Edenfield.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows
Three Guys with Beards,
Jim Moore, Jonathan Maybury,
and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igbon,
Brian Keene of The Horror Show,
Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosamilia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Bizung's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Thank you for coming to the Project Entertainment Network store. Please place your order. A good choice. A t-shirt for The Horror Show with Brian Keene. A Mando Method coffee mug. There's more. A Necrocast Icon hoodie. That's sharp. But why on earth would you want Bizong leggings? Wait. Are you Mr. Frank? The Project Entertainment Network store, stacked with goodies from all your favorite podcasts. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs and more.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.